This is WHYY.
I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Welcome to Radio Times. Comcast Corporation wants to acquire Time Warner Cable, and if the proposed merger is approved, the company would claim about a third of the country's pay TV and internet subscribers. And according to a New York Times editorial, Comcast would operate in 43 of the 50 largest metropolitan markets. Today on Radio Times, what would this mean for Comcast, for consumers, for competitors, and what are the odds that regulators would approve the deal? We begin our conversation with David L. Cohen, Executive Vice President of Comcast. He also serves as Senior Counselor and oversees government affairs. David L. Cohen, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
How would this merger, this acquisition, benefit customers if Comcast were to acquire Time Warner Cable? And I ask that knowing that you told reporters recently we're certainly not promising that customer bills are going to go down or even that they're going to increase less rapidly. So what's in it for customers?
So I want to answer that question, Marty, but I just want to make clear, given your overview, that this transaction is just significantly less scary than the way in which some people would like to characterize it. First of all, we've agreed that we'll divest about 3 million customers from Time Warner Cable, so we'll be under 30% of the market. That's an intensely competitive market. By the way, the FCC used to have a rule that no cable company could own more than 30% of the multi-channel video marketplace. And that rule has been struck down twice by the courts as being too low a number and being unsupported factually or legally. So coming in below 30% is a number that the courts have already said did not present any competitive concerns. And one of the reasons for that is we just don't compete with Time Warner Cable at all. There's no geographic overlap between our companies. So whatever choice a customer had before the transaction, customer will have the same choice after the transaction. So that's why from an antitrust or competition policy concern perspective, this transaction is not particularly troubling.
But from the consumer, perspective, and especially paying these bills that seem to go up pretty regularly.
But you see, this is one of my problems with the way amateur economists like to define competition. They only want to talk about price. In fact, the price on a per-channel basis for cable has dropped significantly over the past 10 or 15 years. We believe that cable provides a tremendous value for customers. When you compare to what customers pay for cable and the rate of increase in those prices as compared to what customers pay to go to a football game, to go to the movies, our price adjustments are considerably lower over time than competing entertainment options. And the choice that we provide and the improved service and the improved services that we're delivering for that is, I think, one of the great values in America, which is why the business is so successful. Competition can produce consumer benefits in many ways independent of price. Competition produces benefits in terms of the quality of service, in terms of innovation, technology, different services at expanded capacity to be able to enjoy your video offering. And those are the types of consumer benefits that you're going to see in this transaction. Because of the increased scale that Comcast has, we've been able to invest in R&D and invest in our platform to a greater extent than any other cable company, including Time Warner Cable, which is probably the second most technologically advanced cable company in America. And so what this transaction will mean for Time Warner Cable customers is an accelerated build-out of their plant, bringing them all digital substantially faster than they would be otherwise. That's going to mean more channels, more high-def channels, faster internet speeds. Right now across the country, Comcast offers faster internet speeds generally than Time Warner Cable does in its footprint, and we're going to accelerate the deployment of those faster speeds and greater capacity to Time Warner Cable customers.
Well,
we're also going to bring substantially more video on demand. Comcast customers enjoy 50,000 video on demand choices, more than 80% of them free. Time Warner Cable customers, 20,000 video on demand choices, and a lower percentage of them free. So in the pure, and in addition, we'll be able to accelerate the rollout of our next generation technologically advanced products like the X1 platform, like Cloud DVR, which we've just started to roll out in Boston. And we'll be able to bring the Comcast customers some of Time Warner Cable's technological advances, such as their Start Over program, which enables you to tune into a television program 15 or 20 minutes late and hit a button and go back to the beginning of the program to watch the programming from the start.
Well, and
that's the consumer benefit.
Okay, and let me quote from Senator John Rockefeller. As you said, this transaction is a lot less scary than what some of the critics have said. He's the chairman of the Senate Commerce Committee, basically overseeing the FCC. And again, I'm quoting from the New York Times. He said the key review element must be whether the creation of an even larger video and broadband juggernaut results in greater choice and lower rates for consumers. This has not been my experience with previous mergers of this size. This is Senator Rockefeller of West Virginia. What do you say back to him?
Well, I say to Senator Rockefeller, with all due respect, that I think previous mergers have dramatically increased the consumer benefit of the cable TV business. We've been able to bring more channels, more choice, faster speed internet, greater services, substantially higher entertainment choices, substantially higher value proposition for customers. I think that past transactions have proved to have enormous consumer benefits, and this one will as well.
I'm quoting.
Anyway, I want to say this. You've stopped at consumers, but some of the biggest pro-competitive benefits of this transaction extend beyond consumers. It goes to small and medium-sized businesses where we are the upstarts competing against the Bells, and we have maybe 10 or 15% of that market. This transaction will enable us to compete better in those markets, to compete for the business with regional and super regional businesses, and that is a place where our competition has dramatically reduced prices, improved the business outlook of thousands of small and medium-sized businesses across our footprint, led to the generation of more jobs, and so there is a place where there will be significant price-related benefits, and in addition, this transaction will produce an additional national advertising competitor, which could result and should result in bringing down advertising prices, which is another significant pro-competitive benefit from this transaction.
And I'm quoting from a number of critics here, but since I have the advantage of having you on the radio, I want to get your response. And this is from an organization called Public Knowledge. Quoting here, an enlarged Comcast would be the bully in the schoolyard, able to dictate terms to content creators, internet companies, and other communication networks that must connect with it, and distributors who must access its content. Again, a lot of concern about this right. potential merger.
Right. So with all due respect, the Public Knowledges, the Free Presses, the Common Causes, these are folks who have come out against every telecom and media merger in the history of mankind. Their position is always that the sky is falling and this will be a disaster. Their predictions of doom have never come to pass. In past transactions, and they won't come to pass in this transaction. So, you know, we have and by the way, I think Senator Rockefeller's statement, I mean, you obviously read an accurate quote, but the real import of his statement was that this was a transaction that he wanted to review, that he wanted to study, that he wanted to hear about, and I think that's exactly the right approach. Groups like Public Knowledge and Free Press and Common Cause, who just say this is a disaster, and roll out the same tired arguments that are neither fact-based nor based in economics, nor have been proved out in any of the prior transactions that have occurred. I expect it from them, but I don't think that their arguments have any credibility, and they shouldn't be given any credibility. There are also many people who have come out in favor of this transaction, and I think their views deserve equal billing. Quite frankly, they are people who have lived, who have lived with the impacts of prior transactions and have recognized the benefits of them. I want to point out, though, because the Public Knowledge quote you read, you know, referred to that this transaction is somehow transformative. It's somehow creating some company that is huge and it's unlike anything that we've ever seen. With less than a 30% market share In the multi-channel video marketplace, that would be roughly the size that Comcast was after it acquired AT&T Broadband in 2001 and Adelphi in 2007. So for most of the first decade of the 21st century, that's the size company we were. And the last time I checked, the world didn't end during that decade. There was nothing disastrous that happened. There was nothing bad that happened for consumers. There were no programmers who were squeezed off the air. There was no adverse consumer benefit. In fact, consumers enjoyed some of the most significant improvements in the quality of their video and broadband experience over the course of that decade. So I would argue that it is that scale that is something we should all be aspiring to. That is something that is good for consumers. It's good for the country. And it's good for the overall consumer experience in video and broadband. It's not creating an unprecedented behemoth or juggernaut. It's simply bringing Comcast back to the same market share that it had for the first decade of the 21st century. And you could say, well, gee whiz, what's happened? I mean, why has your market share go down over that period? That's because of the intense and fierce competition that exists in the multi-channel video space. Over that decade, we've had the telcos get into video. We've had the satellite companies continue to take market share from satellite. So we are functioning, and this transaction has to be viewed in an intensely and fiercely competitive market where consumers have multiple choices, where there is real price competition between people who compete with each other. There's no price competition between Comcast and Time Warner Cable because we don't compete with each other. But we have to compete against Verizon. Time Warner Cable has to compete against Verizon. We have to compete against DirecTV and Dish. Time Warner Cable has to compete against DirecTV and Dish. And that competition is going to remain in full force and effect after this transaction.
About a minute before I have to say goodbye to you, but assuming this deal does go through, would Comcast then agree to net neutrality, in a sense, not prioritizing one content over another?
So we've already agreed to abide by the open internet rules that the FCC put in place, even though the D.C. Circuit has overridden them, has vacated them. And we've already said that that agreement will apply to the Time Warner Cable subs, to the Time Warner Cable systems that we acquire as well. Now, when people say that's a very nice agreement, thank you, but it only lasts until 2018, let's understand that the purpose of that agreement in the NBC Universal transaction was to provide a bridge for the FCC to be able to put in place enforceable open internet rules that would apply to the entire industry. And the chairman of the FCC, Tom Wheeler, commenced the proceeding last week to begin the process to put in place those open internet rules. And we fully expect, and I guarantee you, that Tom Wheeler, as chairman of the FCC, fully expects that he's going to have enforceable open internet rules in place well before 2018. So the short answer to your question is that we fully expect to be bound by enforceable open internet principles. By the way, that is the way in which we have always conducted our business, and we have no problem pledging to continue to conduct our business in accordance with enforceable open internet rules.
David L. Cohen,
put in place by the FCC.
Thank you very much for joining us on Radio Times. We'll be right back.
Thanks, Marty.
Supporting WHYY, Simpson Meadows, a retirement community in Downingtown, PA, in Chester County. Managed by Simpson Senior Services, a nonprofit with a long-standing tradition of care. Simpson Meadows provides personal care for senior adults, along with memory care, respite, and independent living. A specially designed personal care neighborhood staffed with licensed nurses provides assistance with daily tasks to help residents remain as independent as possible. More at SimpsonMeadows.org.
The Americans may be the only TV show about spies that's been created by a former spy.
Can I actually lie to people about what I do? I never had any doubts about it again. It just became part of me, and I lied all the time. Every day I was lying constantly.
Joe Weisberg gives up all sorts of information about his hit show, The Americans, next time in Studio 360 from PRI and WNYC.
Tonight at 10 on WHYY.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now, Dave Barry has a new book about grammar, relationships, and taking his daughter to a Justin Bieber concert.
Just the girl sitting right, I don't know who she was, a girl sitting, maybe, 15, 16-year-old girl sitting to my right, Just her alone was making more noise than all of Hurricane Andrew.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. I just said goodbye to David L. Cohen, Executive Vice President of Comcast. And in this hour of Radio Times, we're talking about Comcast's proposed acquisition of Time Warner Cable. Joining us now is Brian Fung, and he's technology reporter for The Washington Post, has been focusing on electronic privacy, national security, digital politics, and the Internet, has been covering this story as well. And Brian Fung, joining us from the studios of The Washington Post. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
Brian, I know we were trying to get you set up while I was talking with David L. Cohen, so you might not have heard much of our conversation. One of the things he said is that all the sort of critics of this proposed transaction are scaring people, and it's not as scary, I guess, as the critics would have us believe. How do you view this proposed acquisition?
Well, I think there are a lot of questions that still have to be answered, and a lot of those are going to be questions for federal regulators. The deal still has to be approved by shareholders and by the Federal Communications Commission and the Justice Department. So the questions that still need to be dealt with have mainly to do with antitrust concerns and whether or not this deal could potentially mean a decrease in competition.
Well, in fact, the FCC has, I guess, several criteria. One is whether this acquisition would be in the public interest, whether it would result in higher prices, poorer service. Anything else we need to know about how the FCC could potentially rule on this?
No, I think those are the sort of the key benchmarks we're looking at. Over the short term, I think what we're going to see, what consumers can expect from this deal may not be higher prices right away, but that is certainly one concern that the FCC is going to take a hard look at.
In fact, I quoted Senator Rockefeller, who is chair of the Senate Commerce Committee overseeing the FCC, and he had concerns about mergers of this size. He says, this has not been, in my experience, a good thing in terms of lowering rates and greater choices for consumers. David L. Cohen pushed back on that. How do you see that?
Well, that's right. And Senator Rockefeller is not the only lawmaker to raise concerns about the merger. On Friday, Senator Al Franken raised his own questions about, Comcast's commitment that the company made in its last merger with NBC Universal. And during that deal, Comcast, made a number of commitments to uphold net neutrality, as David was saying, to enhance diversity, to promote diversity in programming and that kind of thing. Those are all commitments that Comcast made as a condition of its former, its 2011 deal with NBC Universal. And Franken was saying that some of those commitments have not been fully met by Comcast. And Comcast pushed back a little bit on that yesterday with a report suggesting that it actually exceeded those expectations. So at this point, it's mostly a he said, she said sort of game that we're playing, and we'll have to rely on the FCC to sort out sort of the actual facts of the matter.
And there's no way as a reporter to know whether he said or she said is right or wrong.
Well, at this point, the numbers that Comcast has given in terms of its commitments with the 2011 deal certainly seem promising. It said that about a million low-income Americans have now been connected to Comcast's program to connect low-income Americans with internet service, among other things. So those are certainly promising statistics, and whether or not that's satisfying to Senator Franken is a question for him.
One of the arguments from Comcast is that this proposed acquisition represents really two geographic areas. It's a certain kind of merger. Help us understand, I guess, the thinking behind that and what you think about it.
That's right. So what Comcast is saying here is that there's no competitive reason why federal regulators should block the merger because Time Warner Cable and Comcast serve different geographical regions, as you were saying. That's Comcast's perspective, but in the opinion of a lot of consumer advocates, that's potentially a misleading argument because the real impact of the deal on competition isn't actually in terms of the actual cable industry, but on Comcast's ability to negotiate prices and deals with other content providers, for instance, with its relationship with wireless carriers, with all sorts of other industries that are connected to the cable industry.
So sort of doesn't matter if you're in Washington or Boston. It's more what kind of services can be provided to customers.
That's right. And Comcast stands to gain a great deal of market power out of this. I mean, let's take cell phones, for example.
Sure.
When you're on your cell phone and you're at the office or at home, chances are you're browsing the internet using your Wi-Fi connection and not using AT&T's data plan or Verizon's data plan to serve that internet to you. But think about when you're on Wi-Fi, who's sort of supplying that internet pipe to you? Chances are it's your wired broadband provider, and in many areas, that's Comcast. Mm. So, and that sets up a relationship where more and more traffic is being offloaded, so to speak, to Wi-Fi. And, Cisco recently ran a study on this saying that a huge amount of U.S. internet traffic is routed to the web over Wi-Fi and not over mobile internet. And that number is going to grow tremendously in the future years. So we can expect Comcast accepting more and more of that traffic and then by virtue of that, gaining a huge amount of leverage over wireless companies.
But what Comcast is saying, David L. Cohen is saying, is this is a very competitive market that they're in. They're up against Verizon and others. Is it as competitive as he says it is?
Well, there's certainly quite a great deal of convergence in this area. And so you see companies like Verizon and Comcast getting into wireless phone business, the broadband business, the TV business. You can even see with Comcast buying up NBC Universal, that sort of is Comcast's entry into content production. It's interesting that there are a lot of these businesses that have their hands in all these different pies. Now, what that means for broadband competition specifically is a different question, because in many areas, many Americans have access to only one or two broadband mm-hmm. providers at most.
Well, in fact, you did a story, I guess, based on Consumer Reports, something like 71% of households would switch carriers if their broadband company slowed or even interfered with their internet speeds. But the question is, where would those consumers go? Is that a driving question in this issue?
The Consumer Reports study is really interesting because it hits on a sort of hypothetical question, and it's really revealing in that most people would probably like to switch carriers if their carrier started to throttle or slow down their internet mm-hmm. Their access to certain services on the web. But as you sort of pointed out, there's not a whole lot of options when it comes to actually making the switch. And in many cases, carriers make it very difficult, very costly for consumers to jump services even when there is another provider around.
Why would a carrier, though, want to slow down internet or access? What's in it for them?
Sure. There are a couple of arguments that carriers have advanced. One is that the idea that economists like to talk about this being a two-sided market, and what that means is basically carriers see an opportunity not just to draw revenue from subscribers like you and me, but also to make a bit of money from the content providers. And the common example here is Netflix. So Comcast could potentially decide to charge Netflix a fee to reach its customers, and in fact, that is what it is doing now. Very recently, Comcast and Netflix announced that they had signed a deal whereby Netflix will be provided to consumers at faster speeds and enhancing download rates. So consumers will, in the short run, see a better Netflix service on Comcast. Over the long term, however, it creates questions about what Netflix's future relationship will be to internet providers.
And that's Brian Fung, actually joins us from the NPR studios in Washington, D.C., technology reporter for The Washington Post, and we asked him to join us today on Radio Times. as we talk about this proposed acquisition of Comcast wanting to acquire Time Warner Cable. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. What do you think of this proposed merger? You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Brent, there's a theory out there that we should think of all these services that a company like Comcast provides, that we should think of them like we think of the highway system, or think of it as a utility, that these are not luxuries. These are necessities that we all need to have. I don't know whether that changes the discussion about who controls what, but it's an interesting way to think about this very fast evolving technology.
Absolutely, and that's precisely the analogy that some people have made when thinking about how the FCC should regulate broadband companies. There's this at the heart of the D.C. Circuit Court's opinion on net neutrality, which is the principle that David Cohen was talking about in treating all internet traffic equally. When the federal court issued its decision, there was a lot of debate and a lot of questions being raised about how the FCC has the authority to regulate broadband companies, and whether or not to regulate them as utilities was one main question that is still unresolved. The FCC could decide to classify or quote-unquote reclassify broadband providers as essentially utilities and regulate them the same way as phone companies. And if it did that, it would have no problem, legally speaking, with imposing the kind of rules that the D.C. Circuit struck down in its court opinion.
Well, even thinking now or even a couple of years hence, it's hard to imagine living without broadband.
Well, I don't know that we'll ever sort of reach a point where, we won't have broadband. It is the prospect of a tiered internet is certainly very present at the moment. You have companies like AT&T developing this idea called sponsored data, where if you're a third party company and you want to provide your customers with better service, you can pay AT&T to provide that data to AT&T customers free of charge. That usage of those services won't count against your data cap. The net neutrality rules don't apply to wireless companies, but this is an example of the way that a non-neutral internet could emerge.
Let me get some callers in. I also have a tweet from Michael saying, with the merger, does Comcast have any plans to upgrade their infrastructure to fiber optic cable? We don't have David O'Cohen with us, but Brian, do you have any read on that?
Well, I think that's a really interesting question. Looking at what is happening in places like Austin, Texas, should give consumers a lot of hope and optimism for the future. Whether or not Comcast in particular is going to extend its infrastructure build out, is a separate question. We can sort of look back at the 2011 merger with NBC Universal as a kind of guide for this, where some of the conditions for that merger were that Comcast had to build out new infrastructure. And in its report yesterday, Comcast said that it actually met and exceeded that goal by building out something like around 6,000 miles of new cable over 3 years. Now, looking at again at Austin, there's been a ton of competition recently surrounding Google Fiber. Google has been building a lot of fiber optic infrastructure in Austin, and that spurred some new investment by AT&T, by local infrastructure providers, local internet providers, it's an even encouraged Time Warner Cable to get in on the act by increasing its speeds. So, that may not be building out fiber necessarily, but it is increasing the amount of competition in the broadband market there.
Let me get, looks like Nancy from Cheltenham to join us. Nancy, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hello?
Hi there. Go ahead, Nancy.
Hi. Thanks
there.
For taking my call.
You're welcome.
I live in Cheltenham, and I have Comcast internet and television, and have been very happy for the most part with the service. But I also own a vacation home in Ocean City, New Jersey that I rent out, and Comcast is the only provider in Ocean City, and the service has been just terrible. And there was a particular situation about a year and a half ago where the whole island switched to a digital system, and we had to get a special Comcast box for every TV, and they did nothing to add to their services in order to make that transition easier. And people waited for hours and hours and hours to get these boxes, and sometimes the boxes didn't work, and then you had to wait for hours and hours and hours again, and it was very frustrating. And even now, if there's a problem, they have one little office with two people in it, and they just, there's no competition. Nobody has any choice but to use Comcast.
Well,
and it was very frustrating, and it concerns me when I hear about these mergers of them taking a bigger and bigger portion of the market and having no competition, and as consumers not having any choice.
Well, Nancy, I appreciate the call to Radio Times, a very interesting example of some of what we've been talking about. Brian, your response.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely a valid concern, and it's something that has played out over and over again in the telecom space. I mean, you look at back during the decades ago when AT&T was the big telephone monopoly. At first, AT&T made it a voluntary commitment to extend service to practically everyone in the country, but as time went on, that sort of commitment faded, and it became a gigantic monopoly that had trouble providing services in a competitive way. So I think this is something that has played out over and over again, and we may be seeing something similar here, with the difference being that now the commitment by broadband companies isn't necessarily to serve consumers in the same way that AT&T's commitment of the early 1910s was, but rather to shareholders, and that's something that's a fairly recent development in terms of the 1970s and 80s.
Nancy, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Brian, about a minute before our break here, we have a tweet from Ryan. Why is the cost of internet so high here in the United States when places like South Korea have internet at 10 times our speed for way cheaper? There's probably a whole hour there. Do you have a minute on that?
Absolutely. As you say, it's a very complicated question, but a lot of it boils down to cities allowing cable companies to have a lock on markets, specifically for efficiency reasons.
Oh, meaning you have a little more time. Go ahead.
City governments, said that, by allowing one business to build out all of this, the infrastructure, it eliminates duplicative efforts. So you don't have like six companies building out six different networks in the same place, which is, by definition, duplicative.
Let's take that short break. We'll get back to our conversation with Brian Fung. Again, technology reporter for The Washington Post has been covering electronic privacy, national security, digital politics, and the internet. We called him up to join us to talk about this proposed acquisition, Comcast wanting to acquire Time Warner Cable. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Much more after this very short break. We'll be right back.
The Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts supports WHYY and presents its undergraduate and graduate programs. At PAFA, we are committed to preparing artists with a mastery of their craft. Artists who push boundaries, enhance their communities, and inspire the future of American art. Details to schedule a tour today or apply for fall 2014 enrollment are online at pafa.edu/apply. PAFA. We make artists.
In his new book of poems, Kevin Young writes about the death of his father and the birth of his son. On the next Fresh Air, Young reads from and talks about his collection, Book of Hours. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Very old voices emerge in a very new conflict.
An identity that was sort of comfortably hybrid at certain points is not allowed to be comfortably hybrid at other points.
Russia rewriting Europe's supposedly settled history in the conflict over Crimea and Ukraine. Both sides armed and on the brink. We're watching next time on The Takeaway from PRI Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with Brian Fung about the Philadelphia-based Comcast, the country's largest cable and broadband provider, announcing recently that it wanted to acquire Time Warner Cable. If the regulators approve the deal, Comcast would have about a third of the country's pay TV subscribers, about a third of all Internet subscribers, although we learned from David L. Cohen, a Comcast vice president, that they are going to shed some of those subscribers. But nonetheless, it's a fascinating and important merger to be discussing again with our guest, Brian Fung, 1-888-477-9499. Brian, I'm curious, after Comcast and perhaps even after Time Warner Cable, who's like the third largest of these providers?
Well, you know, we're looking at an interesting market right now that it's very mobile, so you've got one company to focus on actually is Charter, which is the fourth largest company in the market, and Charter was the company that was trying to go after Time Warner Cable, trying to buy it up before Comcast swooped in and sealed the deal. One big question right now is, what is Charter going to do? Is it going to try and purchase Cox, which is the third largest cable company, or is it going to try and capture some of those 3 million subscribers that Comcast pledges to shed? I mean, that's one of the open questions right now.
Is it fair to look at the phone market largely dominated by Apple and Samsung and see perhaps some parallel to what we've been talking about? That seems like a very competitive market, at least to a outside consumer like myself.
Sure. To look at the phone market, you basically have two major companies going at one another, and it's a very competitive market in the sense that both companies are continually trying to develop new features and new devices, and that's driven partly by the fact that if you look at the wireless industry, most people can get rid of their phones every 2 years and get an upgrade, but looking at the broadband industry, your equipment doesn't actually change that often. So the opportunity for the kind of competition that you see in terms of devices in the handset market isn't quite the same.
How influential is Comcast in Washington, D.C.? And I'm looking at the Center for Responsive Politics finding that last year they spent something like $18.8 million lobbying federal lawmakers and regulators. I don't know how this compares to other people that are also lobbying in D.C.
That's a great question. I'd have to have the numbers in front of me to make a judgment on that. But broadly speaking, I think that Comcast combined with Time Warner Cable's lobbying efforts would amount to a substantial chunk of money. Certainly there's a lot that's going to be at stake in terms of media and broadcasting and the cable industry moving forward as the House considers whether to rewrite the law that governs the FCC and it's the same law that sort of shapes a lot of the decisions surrounding how the government regulates the cable industry, the broadband market, the telecommunications world, and so that lobbying money is going to make a big difference, I think, in coming months as that sort of legislative effort ramps up.
And you're allowed to lobby the FCC?
Yes, although not. Don't know if it's in the same way necessarily as congressional lobbying. Certainly, companies will meet with FCC officials to try and influence them one way or another, and that's certainly par for the course.
Let me get back to our callers. We have David from Elkins Park joining us on Radio Times. David, go ahead. You're on the air. Do we have David? Let's try David again. Yes, go ahead, David. No, we don't seem to. He says we're leaving out two things, competition and political power, wanting to know whether our whether you can discuss that. We touched on that just briefly, but I guess in terms of wielding power in Washington, whether Comcast can call the shots.
Well, so there's a really interesting sort of political battle playing out right now, I guess I should say not right now, but has been playing out over multiple years now, is sort of the relationship between cable companies and broadcast companies, traditional TV broadcasters who have a lot of control over content. And this sort of manifested itself in the Time Warner Cable CBS blackout last year, and that sort of, for many Americans, I think, put on display how much power broadcasters have when it comes to extracting revenue from cable companies. At the core of that debate is essentially a dispute over whether or not or how much cable companies should pay broadcasters in exchange for carrying broadcast content. And that's a debate, an issue known as retransmission consent. And, it gets pretty technical pretty quickly, but, I think one thing you can take away from that is that broadcasters have an enormous amount of control over what their content looks like and how it's distributed to ordinary consumers. That's also playing out potentially in the Supreme Court, where a company called Aereo is being challenged about its ability to take broadcast signals from TV broadcasters and then put it on the internet without paying broadcasters the retransmission fees that cable companies pay. So whether or not Aereo will be continued, will continue to be allowed to do that is one question that the court is going to take up this spring.
And what about all those people that cut the cord?
That's a great question, and that came up during the Olympics, and a lot of people were upset about not being able to watch the Olympics on a totally sort of cord cut basis. Mm-hmm. You were either locked into watching NBC's time delayed stream or its online stream on the internet if you were a cable subscriber. There are really for where we are in terms of technology, the ability for many people to completely cut the cord altogether is we're not quite there yet.
I was talking with, and we're having some technical problems here with our phone, and hopefully we can get that squared away. I'm going to give out the email address, radiotimes@whyy.org, or you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. And I keep quoting David Cohen, but I know you were not listening or you weren't able to hear that, Brian. But he was saying, price for price, when you look at what people are paying for cable, they're getting a lot for their money. I think for some people, they're feeling like, well, I only want 7 channels, but now I have to pay for 250. How should we think about pricing, I guess, and access to cable shows?
Yeah, I think what Comcast's trying to do here is provide much more content for the same package. You're looking at again with the Comcast NBC Universal deal. Comcast was making a play for many of the cable channels that NBC Universal owns. Obviously NBC Universal has the Universal Film Studio. So Comcast there is trying to make a play for content, and then you can sort of think of that as being one side of this. Of a broader strategy, and the other side of that strategy is with this Time Warner Cable deal to acquire wider means of distribution to get that content to a larger number of subscribers. So, to look at it holistically, what you're seeing is an attempt to pack more content into the same package and an attempt to extract more value out of that from consumers.
But I think and I would include myself, in many ways, I think consumers want the a la carte choice. They don't necessarily want about 50 sports channels, for instance.
That's right. And that's something that Senator John McCain has been pushing really hard for years and years to try and unbundle the cable experience. Mm-hmm. The trouble for cable companies is that it's very hard for them to make money off of selling individual services. And so that's part of the reason why they're so resistant to it.
Well, we're going to, fingers crossed here, we're going to try the phones again. Brian, let's see what Tom from Center City, Philadelphia has to say. And Tom, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Brian. Hi, Marty. How are you?
Good, Tom. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good. So I run a streaming movie service that's based here in Philadelphia. And about 4 years ago, when we launched our platform, we planned about $1 million cable advertising buy through Comcast that they essentially shut down and told us we are not going to allow you to market your service and compete with us on our own network. And at the time, we didn't have any other choice, so we ended up going directly to the broadcasters and advertising that way to kind of work around it. But to me, the idea that they're promoting competition is all but laughable. You know, when it's clear, you know, it's just about the bottom line.
Well, Tom, let me take your comment there and your example. Let me see what Brian Fung has to say. Brian, what do you think?
Well, so, yeah, I mean, I think that's a really interesting example of the way that you know, Comcast potentially the way that the Comcast deal could potentially affect smaller providers, entrepreneurs, startups. You know, a lot of people who oppose the Comcast Time Warner merger say that, you know, by consolidating the industry this way, it makes it a lot harder. You know, on the one hand, it makes it harder for companies like Netflix to reach customers without having to pay Comcast. But also at the margins, it makes it harder for companies that are trying to start up to compete with those like Netflix that can afford to pay Comcast, you know, however much it's paying to reach Comcast subscribers.
But is that just the marketplace? I mean, like a boutique store has a hard time competing with Macy's, for instance.
Well, you know, at the current, where we are right now, neither Netflix, or I guess as of several weeks ago, neither Netflix or these startup companies had to pay anything to Comcast to reach Comcast subscribers. And now all of a sudden, you have... with a you know, Netflix Comcast deal, Netflix is paying Comcast for better service in order to reach customers on Comcast network. And you know, chances are a smaller provider, you know, like Tom's, would not be able to afford that that expense. So that's, you know, one question about competitiveness as a result of this deal is you know, what the downstream effects are going to be on smaller startups.
Tom, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let me see what Brian from Pottstown has to say. Brian, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. My comment is that I hope the regulators will consider the non-subscriber, that is those people who don't have cable for one reason or another. And just I would say for instruction, look at the recent contract that they signed with the Phillies, NBC/Comcast, which cuts to 12 games the free telecasts, and which used to be every Sunday you could count on Channel 17 being a free broadcast. And it's, I think it's outrageous what they've done.
Well, Brian, I appreciate the call to Radio Times, and that would be Brian on the phone. Brian Fung, to you, your response.
Well, you know, it's an interesting situation. What you know, Comcast, as I said, you know, Comcast has its hands in more and more industries, and if not, you know, a direct influence on it, you know, the company at least can influence what you know, the as I said, the downstream effects by exercising an enormous amount of market power over other companies that are engaged in those activities. So you know, I think that's a perfect example of one of the ways that this is playing out.
Brian from Potsdam, thanks for the call to Radio Times. And to you, Brian Fung, where does this, assuming this merger is approved by the FCC, and I do want to ask you about that, but where does that leave, or where would that leave, I guess, non-Comcast subscribers? Does it change their life in any way?
Well, it depends on you know, what those non-Comcast subscribers are already subscribed to, and you know, whether we're talking about it in a broadband context or you know, a TV context or a wireless device context. You know, as I mentioned before, there's a huge amount of traffic being offloaded to Wi-Fi, and you know, for people who use use, you know, wireless devices, that's you know, potentially a tremendous impact on the way that we experience the internet as non-Comcast subscribers. So, you know, a lot of it depends on what your relationship is to Comcast now, and not just, whether it's a direct relationship or not.
Just a couple minutes before we have to say goodbye here. And so when or has the FCC already taken up this issue, and what's their timetable?
Comcast expects to sort of close the deal by the end of the year. So, I think it's reasonable to expect that the FCC and the Justice Department will be taking a close look at this over the coming months. But I don't expect that we'll see any immediate movement on it. The analysts that I've talked to say that, the FCC seems likely to look favorably on this particular merger in a way that they weren't necessarily eager to look on previous mergers with the telecom space, namely AT&T and T-Mobile from several years ago. And part of the reason that is because of Comcast's willingness to commit to obligations surrounding net neutrality, surrounding diversity and broadband deployment, but it also has to do with the state of the current broadband market as it is, whether the Justice Department will take a similar view is not so clear. Top antitrust regulator at the Justice Department has signaled his skepticism about the deal, so we'll see whether or not they go along with the plan.
Well, Brian Fung, thanks so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
My pleasure.
And Brian Fung, technology reporter for The Washington Post. He joined us from the studios of NPR in Washington, D.C. And we began our conversation with David L. Cohen, Executive Vice President of Comcast. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times. You can find much more about this program, including a podcast and Facebook, Twitter, email archives. I'm Artie Moscowen. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. And do stay with us. We'll be right back.